OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that bald spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.
8 All-Irelands as a player, 5 National Leagues, 4 All-Stars, all with Kilkenny. He is now the manager of the Laois Hurlers into his second season. Season 1, a triumph. Won the Joe McDonagh. They beat Dublin 6 days later on a historic occasion and bowed out against Tipperary in an All-Ireland quarter-final. Now into his second season in charge. Eddie, you're very welcome. It's not the second season you'd envisaged, I suspect.
No, good evening, Joe. It's not. It's, I suppose, a half season, really. When it just got, I suppose, a little bit rudely interrupted. But yeah, that's a pity because at this time of the year, you know, we'd have been halfway through our Leinster campaign. We'd have had Kilkenny at home last Saturday weekend, or last Saturday night. It would have been Nolan Park against Kilkenny in the week before against Galway. So we would probably be in the position of reassessing and recovering and getting ready for the next match, which was Dublin in Parnell Park in a week and a half's time.
And what do you think you would have beaten Kilkenny by?
I think we'd have got home by a point, but I'd have taken the draw, to be honest. look, it's a pity because I think at the time of year when all this came tumbling down on us, I think we were all looking forward to that. Hesitantly, I might add, going to Nolan Park. But look, it was it's a pity because the players were really looking forward to it, and we had a couple of injuries that were starting to settle down. So it is what it is, unfortunately. Mm.
I have to say, the thought of you getting up in Brian Cody's face about an hour in, like this thing in the melting pot now, would be just the treat. That would be a photo I'd like to see.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's the beauty of being the Banished Door. You get to delegate, so I had Niall Corcoran earmarked for that job. So he was possibly going to man mark Martin Comerford for the night. But yeah, look, I suppose we'll just have to you know, wait and see what happens with all that. So disappointing, really, in a way, because the weather is just absolutely perfect for hurling. I think if anything, you could even argue it's been too good. You know, we would have had some unbelievable club hurling from the start of April right into the middle of May now, where Munster and Leinster would be really in the throes, and the Joe McDonagh and all the other competitions would have been flying full tilt ahead.
Yeah, I can see the weather behind you and the bright evenings coming in, and sometimes the senses remind us of the past, or we associate different parts of the year, different smells with different things. I would say for people like you immersed in this sport all your life, driving home, the freshly cut grass, the evening sunshine, that means one thing and one thing only. I'd say everybody's kind of getting the twitch in their arms.
Yeah, it is. It's just, I suppose, something very normal, as we would class it, and routine. And, you know, it's gone from us for the time being. So it's something that you just look forward to. I think even once you get out of your league campaign and the grass starts to get cut and the clocks go back, I think we all associate that with the fast summer hurling, and it's what I suppose makes all the winter training worthwhile.
Are the Laois players in total lockdown, Eddie? Do they have programmes? Is it being left up to themselves at the moment?
It's a little bit of both, to be honest, Joe. My own view on it is it's very difficult to keep lads, you know, with their foot to the floor when they have no definitive timeline. So in a way, since this all kicked off, we've kind of left them be. We've told them, you know, to keep up the programmes, to keep tipping away. And, you know, I think after a couple of weeks, the novelty of that can wear off, because I think we were all maybe hoping that there would be a quick fix to this and that May would come. But to be honest, after a couple of weeks, it was obvious that it wasn't. It was a little bit more serious than that. But yeah, I suppose I've really left them alone a good bit. We checked in with them there maybe 2 weeks ago and did a small bit of Zoom. And again, we're sitting down discussing how we're going to proceed from here, because right now, the advice from the president is that all squads will stand down. So I suppose there'll be a level of communication maybe with the lads and see what they're doing. But they're good, in fairness. I think the players themselves, nowadays, the modern player is very much into their routine, into their gym work, into their training. So I think, in fairness, the lads can be trusted to do that, and they tip away, and I think they enjoy that bit of routine. But I'd say now more than ever, they would love a heavy slog in that kind of weather.
Mm. John Horan was obviously on the Sunday game a couple of weeks ago, and the language he used was that as long as social distancing is a priority, was the phrase he used, we won't have games. Now, it's going to be a priority, social distancing, that is, until really a vaccine or antivirals, or it turns out a huge percentage of the country have had the disease and may or may not have realised. So we're looking at a long layoff here and maybe no championship this year. If the only option was one behind closed doors, which will be the only option if there's going to be one, are you in favour of that? You're happy to go out and play championship games away from a crowd just to get it done for the players, for the, I guess, the simple pleasure of taking part and trying to win something? Or is it not worth it without the fans?
I think it's very much, I'd find it very weird without it. The gun is put to my head, I'd say no. I don't think it would be the same without the fans. I don't think we should run a championship just for the sake of running a championship or for ticking a box. And we know we all want it and we'd love a few matches. I think if there was a Junior B championship played off in the morning and it was streamed live, it would be the most viewed going, because we're just craving games. But I think, personally, I couldn't see, we've all played challenge matches behind closed doors, and there's just no atmosphere to it, really, and you can hear everything that's going on. But I think that atmosphere draws it out of you a little bit more. I think as a player, I think that's what you want. You want to play in front of the big crowds. You want to play in front of the big stadiums. So that would definitely be weird. But look, if it's for the sake of, if it has to be, it has to be. There's no problem. I think once everybody gets the level playing field with that, I think that the one thing that you want is that if they announce what way it's going to roll, that everybody comes from the same base in terms of, you know, it's a green light now to start doing collective training. But yeah, look, if I'm being asked black and white, I wouldn't really be in favour of that. I just couldn't imagine it being anything like what championship hurling is about. I'm sure the players won't mind if you end up winning the Liam McCarthy or a Leinster or a Munster championship. You may not be too fussed.
The other point, of course, which maybe affects hurling more so than football, is if we get to October, November time and this thing starts, the weather, really, I mean, for hurling in particular, could be, well, not ideal to say the least. Like, behind closed doors, hurling in the depths of winter. It's not great for football either, but it's hard to imagine anyone giving a great account of themselves across a hurling championship like that.
No, it certainly changes the dynamic of it, and it'll probably go down as one of the historical years, and that nearly all the hurling was played during the depths of winter, from one winter and missed the summer and back into another of 20, because, you know, you had your club was played off Walsh Cup and competitions like that, Fitzgibbon Cup, so the league didn't get finished, and five rounds of league was finished there before the first weekend in March. So and we saw all sorts of weather, so it would be it mightn't appeal, but like I said, I think if you're the team that ends up pinching a bit of silverware, you're probably not going to be fussed. But it would change the dynamic of it a little bit. I think some teams really, really get going that little bit more when the ground is fast and the ball is flying around. Others, then it might suit them a little bit more that the ball isn't flying around. I think if you're the cornerbacks, you certainly don't like to see that ball flying from side to side.
Yeah, so I presume you, with your pace in particular, you know, in your prime, firm ground summer hurling, that was where you felt you had a much better chance against big Jackie Tyrrell trying to smack you.
Ah, yeah, it'd be brilliant. And I think if they even applied the social distancing for marking, it would be better again, because if the cornerbacks had to leave you off for the guts of 2 metres, that'd be brilliant. So they'd even give you time for a little fumble here and there. But I think, you know, you suffer the winter training and the league and the stuff. You just, you're acclimatised to that, and it is what it is. But you ultimately live for those championship evenings. And, you know, as a spectator, one of the matches that I really enjoyed going to was 2013 when Tip came down to play Kilkenny in Nolan Park on a Saturday evening in weather something like this. That was a special atmosphere, and that was the one time that I really, really missed being a player, because that was a special evening to be part of, and it was a great game. So for players, this is the weather they live for, and this is why they probably do all that tough training during the winter.
So life with Laois, not what you expected this summer, clearly. Life at work, I would say, has taken a different turn as well. You're with the Guards, I think people are well aware of that. Day to day, how have things changed? What have you been doing? Has the demands on you changed massively?
Yeah, a little bit more. You're out and you're doing, we'll say, you know, there's 12-hour shifts now, 7 to 7 during the day and night. So it's two of each. You do two lates and two earlies. So it's definitely different. But I think in general, look, it's been refreshing to a point because it's something different. I was used to life down in the Garda College, and that was it was routine Monday to Friday. But it's good to get out and about. It's good to see how it's happening in the real world. And I suppose it's in difficult circumstances. But what I'm finding so far is there's plenty of positive things happening out there. I think, if anything, it has probably made us open our eyes a little bit more, in general, because we're having to look and be a little bit more neighbourly than anything else, and be aware of other people, because I think we sometimes, maybe up to now, we had been very, very engrossed in our own daily and weekly routines. So there's always positives that come out of it, and look, hopefully, I think, what you're seeing the last couple of days since the handbrake has come off a little bit, there's a lot more people out there, there's a lot more vehicles on the road, so hopefully, it doesn't get too... we don't get too giddy and get ahead of ourselves. I think if it's been described as anything, it's going to be a marathon rather than a sprint, the whole social distancing. And we have the different stages of how things might return to what we perceive to be normal.
I guess the only answer you can give to this question is anecdotal, I suppose. But in terms of the nature of the job, it would jump out at me that maybe crime has gone down, maybe domestic incidents are going up. Are they the kind of things you're seeing?
Yeah, it has changed. I think what you're seeing is the normal run of things has changed, because obviously people have to stay indoors a lot more, and sometimes that might lead to people being cooped up in the house together for periods of time, and that can lead to frustration. So all in all, I suppose we're there to try to help people as much as anything else, and you're hoping that which people have been, the vast majority of people have been very, very good and engaged with us and all frontline services for that matter, because I think you see that, look, if we stick at it together, that's what's going to happen. We'll get a positive outcome, hopefully. But yeah, there is, look, it's certainly different scenarios bring different challenges, and thankfully there's been nothing too serious so far, and long may that last.
Good. How do you decompress after facing those challenges?
You decompress with a couple of hours work at home with the kids. So there's a few of them out there at the moment. They have some kind of a water slide out there now. So I have a few hours to put in on that. But it's reality. I suppose you just do the normal things and come home and chill out and maybe do a little bit of training or go for a run or something like that. So it's just it's like anything, you just adjust and you structure your routines a little bit different. So I think it's important when you're doing 12-hour shifts like that you're getting a bit of exercise as well. And it's like anything, you just have to be a little bit creative with what you do with your time. Like I said, I have three little smallies out there that keep you busy, and that's all good.
Yeah, it's a major gear shift when you come in the door, I'm sure, after a 12-hour shift to whatever madness is going out in your back garden right now.
Yeah, that's it. And it's a good thing, really, I suppose. It's nice in a way that when you're leaving somewhere, you can leave work behind you and press the reset button for when you get home. And look, all that is very, very enjoyable at the moment. I suppose, if anything, that's probably been the plus that I found, is you have that little bit more time with your families. So there's pluses and minuses, but the pluses are better anyway, thank God, there's more of them.
I'm not surprised your exercise still plays a big role for you. You'd like to keep fit. You look like you've been keeping fit since you stopped playing.
Yeah, it's the habits just don't fade away. They might lapse for a little while, but I enjoy training. I enjoy it's as much the blowout as anything else. And maybe you're living in hope of making one more appearance at Junior B at Junior B level. But
do you think what do you think about when you're running? Do you relive games ever?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, you do. It's funny the different things that you do turn over. I suppose the last while we've seen with the TG4 goals and the different things, you get to rekindle different matches. But I suppose for me, a lot of it is almost visualizing. You're looking ahead, because it's just I'm a creature of habit in relation to that. You're planning maybe a block ahead, and even last week you're kind of going, we would have been getting ready to play Kilkenny this weekend, and what would we be doing now? So in some ways you're maybe tearing at yourself a little bit and what could have been. But it's grand. Sometimes you just lose yourself with maybe the pressure that's coming on, and saying, I used to be able to run a kilometre a little bit faster than this.
Imagine Brian Cody in your head or watching. Is it a collegiate atmosphere amongst inter-county managers? I mean, I dare say the week or month of a match against Kilkenny, you're not going to pick up the phone to Brian Cody and chew the fat over tactics. But are there other inter-county managers that you would talk to and pick up the phone to and chat about trends in the game? Or who do you take advice from, or are you kind of a lone wolf?
I don't, you know, I wouldn't really be picking up the phone to too many of them. I think, you know, the only real contact you have with lads is maybe if you're organising games or something like that, and it might lead to a chat here and there. And, you know, once or twice I've been able to talk to the likes of John Kiley or even Liam Sheedy, or, you know, and even, I suppose, we spend a lot of time, even myself, Niall Corcoran and Tommy Fitz, talking about matches. So that's really where we would take our that's where we'll do most of my engagement anyway, because we'll be talking over, you know, players and setups and things like that, and looking at opposition, and have we something that, you know, you might just get a brainwave, and you might see a little tactic or something that might work against a certain opposition. So it's little bits and pieces like that. But you would. You spend a lot of time, I spend a lot of time thinking about matches, and that's usually maybe what engrosses a journey to and from work. Maybe sometimes you'll wander off and start thinking about something like that. But it's what could have been, because like I said there, we would have been getting ready to play Dublin now Saturday week or Sunday week. And would have viewed into wrapping up the Leinster campaign at home to Wexford. So that's the little bit of disappointment that's there, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it would have been great for the supporters and for you. So what's that? You've had Galway, Kilkenny, Dublin, Wexford. Would that have been your?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah,
geez,
it was.
Best of luck with that.
Yeah, the group of deaths, but look, it was going to be a massive tall order, but I still felt that the lads were in a position to take on a couple of those challenges. Like, I think probably the baptism of fire was going to be Galway at home and Kilkenny away in the first two matches. Like, and you're just clinging to hope and saying, look, if we got something out of either of those matches, like if you could sneak something there, then all you're looking for is one result that could change it. And we've seen last year, like, how, you know, one result can definitely turn a whole provincial setup on its head. But it was going to be a tall order, there's no doubt about that. But I think the big benefit I was seeing from it was that we were going to get four games in a Leinster campaign against top opposition, knowing that you're in the Leinster campaign the following year again. So it was going to be a massive, massive opportunity for the development of players and for them to, again, acclimatise a little bit more to what it takes at this level.
And in terms of the playing population, did you notice an extra eagerness from lads who were maybe less keen, reasons of time commitment and busy with work or different reasons last year, who maybe didn't want to come on board? Did you notice an extra bit of appetite around the county to get involved with the senior setup this year, or was it much the same?
It was more or less the same. I think, look, for different reasons, I'm presuming all managers have different, you know, where players just decide, like, you know, you look at Peter Duggan decide to travel for a year, and what a major loss he is to Clare, and lads make decisions for their own reasons. It's still, you're kind of going, look, I suppose maybe Laois is a smaller county in terms of population too. But at the same time, you'd say, you'd be hoping, look, that at some stage you have every single hurler in Laois chomping at the bit to get in there. And it just does give you maybe a stronger hand. But look, it's something I suppose I've spoken a nice bit about, and it keeps resurfacing its head a little bit from time to time.
Sorry, I didn't realise that you've aired a few grievances before, have you?
No. It's something that has come up. Yeah, I did initially at the start, I suppose, the eagerness, youthful enthusiasm of a rookie manager maybe to some point, but at the same time, look, I think no matter what you are or what you're doing, I think it's the enthusiasm of the group that is committed. I think you'll always, you know, reinforce that and commit to the guys that are committed to the setup. That's a given, obviously enough. But I suppose it was maybe based on my experiences and where I came from as a player that you just couldn't kind of get your head around that a little bit. But it is what it is. You move on, and I think you just adjust and You look at what materials you have to work with, and you work with those guys. And when guys are savagely committed to something, I think that's the most important thing, and it's most important that you invest in those guys.
What kind of pool of players would you be choosing from? How many teams in Laois are we talking? Small population, small enough county, but like a real hurling tradition, I know. But give or take, how many teams are you out trying to look at across a club championship?
Well, you're looking at the guts of, you know, 8, 10, you know, real, you know, a senior teams, yeah. there's a senior A championship in Leash as well, and then you obviously have your intermediates down along. So what you have, I suppose, with the population or the way the county is, it's kind of generally the west of the county is mainly hurling, and you know the east of the county is probably stronger football, and you have Port Leash in the middle, which is, you know, have a good tradition in both. That's where it's at. I mean, it's a small enough pool of players, really, but there is some good players coming through. You know, there's a Setanta program there that was being admired in a lot of counties. But you'd say there's a lot of that minor team from last year that ran Wexford close in the championship. There's a lot of quite good young hurlers coming through that, and even the under-20s this year. You know, they were probably a little bit young just yet, but there is good talent coming through there. So you'd be hoping maybe, you know, in the next year or two to develop those guys. And I think once there's maybe an alignment from the 20s and the minors even through, that's where you're going to get your players. And even the panel we have are quite young at the moment. A lot of them are in around the 22, 23 mark. So if you were to say in 3-4 years' time, they should have a really good senior squad in Leash.
Mm. You obviously saw Cody do it for years and years and years, incredibly successful. You would, you know, worked with the Kilkenny underage team as well, would have had a good sense of what's involved. Having done your first year, what was the big learning or the thing maybe that surprised you a little bit, or the piece of advice you would have picked up that you could give to yourself, you know, in the past? What jumped out at you, the reality of doing it?
The time that's involved, really, right. I think it's a huge commitment. Again, I would have been learning myself very, very quickly, and at times I did come a little bit overawed with it, because there is so much that you have to keep your fingers on. If I was giving advice to younger me, you'd be saying, you have to define whether you're going to be a manager or a head coach. I think the two are worlds apart in a lot of regards. I think you have to say, is it the coaching aspect of things? Because management incorporates, I suppose, other aspects of it, and maybe the financial side of things, as in resources that are available to you and stuff like that. So there's definitely both. And I think if you're an aspiring coach or manager, I think it's something that you'd probably have to sit down and have a good think about, and maybe put down what your teaching or your coaching philosophy is going to be. I read, I think it was Pete Carroll's book, The Seahawks Coach, going back a good few years ago. And there was a lot of similarities with him and Brian Cody's setups. But one of the things he said was that he had kind of tried to be a collage of other managers. So if he was shadowing one manager, he tried to be like him, whereas he had to actually sit down one day himself and sit down and say, well, this is what Pete Carroll's coaching is going to look like, or this is what a Pete Carroll setup is look like. So I haven't got to that point yet either. So
I was just going to say, have you made up your mind?
No, I think, look, if I'm the coaching side of it is what appeals, because you just want to be on the pitch and you want to be involved in sessions. But there's also that side of it where you trust the guys, and in Tommy and Niall have two really good coaches. And once we have those discussions before training, you just sit back and you have to watch the players, really. And that's, I think, the one thing for a manager is, and when it comes to picking teams, you're sitting down watching what the players are doing and how they're applying themselves. And I would definitely see huge value in that, because sometimes then it'll come to a split decision and you'll trust your gut instinct, or you might see one little thing in training that can often be the difference between playing one guy over another guy. And there's I think that would be the first port of call. I probably jumped into it a little bit without sitting down and actually sitting down and say, what do I want? What is my setup going to look like? But that's part of life. That's part of the learning, really.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. We've taken enough of your time, and there's three kids outside in a pool, and I'd say they're wondering where you are. So we'll let you go. Eddie Brennan, great to chat.
No bother,
and keep up the good work. Good man. Thanks a million.
No bother. All the best, Joe. Good evening.
Off the ball on News Talk.